I'm not necessarily saying that I have to look at every situation. I don't know that that is not happening. I'm not sure. That's not addressed by the studies that, or the regulations or the PDD or anything. So it is possible. It depends on each situation. Nobody's denying that the house is feeling it and that the people are feeling it and that the house is shaking. So, you know, that is just a matter of trying to keep that vibration down as low as they can possibly get it to reduce, minimize those effects as much as they can.
I've got a question, and your presentation was very nice.
Okay, thank you.
I find it hard to believe, but it was very nice.
So do I.
I live right on Drexel.
Okay.
I'm right across the street.
Right.
I've got a 17 by 35 foot pool in ground that is 3 feet on one end, 6 feet on the other. It holds 18,000 gallons of water. Mid-August of last year, the weather was in the 80s, sunny, beautiful day. I had people in the pool and a blast went off. And the blast actually put waves in the pool, and the water level is this much below the concrete. It actually sloshed water on the deep end onto the concrete. The blast.
Okay.
Do you think that might do some damage to a house?
Absolutely not.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, I've presented the facts and the science that we go by.
I give you all the respect in the world, but you have got to, I would like some of the stuff that you're drinking or some of the Kool-Aid you're drinking, because how do you, in an enclosed area, how do you move 18,000 gallons of water right after a blast?
Water moves.
But the blast didn't do anything.
I mean,
excuse me, I'm done.
Okay.
I'm done.
Okay.
What about underneath rock strata?
Underground?
Yes.
Sure. I mean, what specifically are you asking? I mean, what are the effects on underground?
When you're blasting, you are moving.
Oh, you're concerned about the rock maybe underneath your house being damaged or moving?
Yes.
Okay.
Just like an earthquake?
Well, it's not just like an earthquake. It is completely.
Oh, really?
Okay.
If you're moving rocks, you are having blast produced vibration, which is going into the rock strata and it's coming out in the structures across the street. And that is not air produced blast, that is produced from underneath.
I'll just say that the ground vibration that's created, and if you go back to the slide ratio of the rock fragmentation, there's a reason that they blast. Rock is hard to break up. And the fractures in the rock that are created by the blasting are extremely localized to the blast site. And so the actual movement of the ground outside of the blast site is less than a sheet of paper or, you know, thickness of a human hair. So there's not any effect on the underground.
He just told you about his pool.
He told me about the water in the pool. That's different than the actual pool itself. Water is going to react and move. It's going to respond to the vibration. I don't doubt that waves were created.
You're saying his pool didn't move at all?
Less than a human hair.
Oh, my God.
I mean, all I can go off is the science and the data that we use, and I'm just presenting those facts. You can choose to believe it or not, but that is the data that we use. So.
I just can't
tell you. We had two here. I don't know if we want.
You mentioned in some of the data when it came to cumulative blasts,
sure,
and measuring those on a structure over time, you said poured foundations. I don't know of anybody in our subdivision who has a poured foundation for the basement. We have cinder and block, and I would think that would respond differently than a poured.
Sure, it would respond differently, but it's not going to be weaker than that. The other thing to consider when you're talking about a poured or a, you know, cinder block or, you know, field stone basement is that it's underground, it's in the ground in a lot of cases, and that's restricted by the ground. It's not able to respond. That's why the upper portions of the house are more susceptible, because they're free to respond. So in addition to the materials themselves, even if they are older, fieldstone or cinder block foundations, those are all going to be, the materials themselves are stronger than the mortar joints. It's all going to be dictated by the mortar joint, and that cracking has been found at the 3 inches per second limit. And if you had damage at that level, you would have massive damage upstairs because those materials are all far more brittle than the foundation. So you can't have those damage to those stronger portions of the house without also damaging the weaker portions as well.
I complained about a blast after October 1st. It was the end of October. I filled out the complaint form on the city website. It was a bright blue sky, not a cloud in the sky. I determined it felt like my house. It didn't feel like October 1st, but it felt like the second biggest blast I've ever felt. It was late October. I felt on the quarry floor. Didn't hear anything from the quarry. The conditions of the atmosphere was, I think it was a 50, 60 degree day, but it was blue sky. We had just gone to a meeting and heard Clint say about on October 1st, the cloud level, and it went over the berm and hit the cloud level. This was a bright blue sky, not a cloud in the sky. Why did my house feel that blast on a perfectly, you couldn't have asked for a more perfect atmospheric day.
Right. And I don't think anybody said that there's no air blast if there's perfect atmospheric conditions. I mean, there's air blast on every blast.
I'm feeling is an air blast and not a ground.
Well, I don't know for sure. I mean, that's one of the components. Most likely you're south of the quarry, correct?
Correct.
And so based on the data that we have collected there, the ground vibration there is relatively low in most cases at that seismograph. So I tend to think a lot of times that the perception that you're feeling is a lot of times the air blast. It may not always be the case, but that's, I mean, you're going to feel it. It's subjective, and every blast is different.
Okay. The seismograph you're referring to, we've been to a lot of meetings. The seismograph, even Clint mentioned at a previous meeting, the committee mentioned, it's been talked about that location at 5800 Allwood is next to our pumping station. When it has been determined already in previous meetings, when the pumping station comes on, the monitor is inaccurate.
I don't have any information to support.
Yeah, that's not the discussion that was happening. That discussion was around was the meter vault when they put, is basically a truck toolbox, if you would. They put it right next to, is it a pumping station there on 51st Street? So about halfway between Drexel and out, and they put it right up against the concrete. And then there's a freestanding pipe right here. And inside that meter vault, you know, it was just not a good setup because we opened it up, we had mouse droppings in there, a mouse nest, and so there's a lot of things that factor. So it was the application from the building, this pipe right here, it just was not a good setup. So that's more of the setup that we're talking about because the one up Allwood is a geophone that's actually away from the building.
Right, it's up at the corner of the building where you can see at the front corner of any building closest to the blasting. So the geophone is buried near the corner of the structure, and then the box is kind of tucked in behind the tree.
So it was more the setup in how they located right next to the building with this moving pipe that was the issue. So the wrong pump house, I guess.
Okay. Has that monitor been relocated so it's not going to cause an issue?
No. The other one was not ours. That was the one that the city had set up. So that, my understanding is that's where, I believe it's Saul's that you've contracted with, is going to set theirs up in close proximity there. So we'll have verifiable data there between theirs and ours.
What do you think is going on? I mean, there was over 50 complaints to the city with 30, 35 people in attendance after that October 1st blast. In your expert opinion, what is going on?
Specifically to the October 1st blast?
Right.
I think it's a couple of things. We've already touched on them a bit. I mean, I think one factor is if you looked at the map of where all the blasting was, there were only three blasts that year that were on the southern portion of the quarry. The remainder of the blasts were all over, several thousand feet away in the northeast portion of the quarry. So one of three blasts, and I think that October 1st blast was maybe a little bit later in the day. You know, so I mean, those are all factors as to why that blast was, you know, perceived as being stronger, because it was closer, and you know, the results were relatively higher than the rest of the results just because of the distance away from the other blast. The other factor is the air over pressure that we discussed. It, you know, because it was the atmospheric conditions, there may have been a little bit higher air over pressure than we would have liked as a result of that, even though it was still within compliance levels. But that all factors into the perception why you felt that blast more than others.
The late October blast that I complained about, I would have loved to call back. I would have loved to know where the location in the quarry that blast was. I had nothing to compare it to. When people don't call back the residents, we have nothing to...
Derek's telling me that would have been up here somewhere. I don't know exactly where, but it wouldn't have been one of the closer ones. So, as I mentioned, every blast is different. And just because they're further away doesn't mean it's not going to equal one of the other blasts just because of different conditions. It's entirely possible you can perceive one from the upper end of the quarry, you know, just as strong as one from the southern end of the quarry. It just depends on the day and the variables that are involved.
I mean,
if it's a perfect day,
the temperature,
that doesn't mean, like I said, that there's no air over pressure. It still does go out, and it still is able to be heard and felt. And so, that's, I think, the things that lead to that.
I think the issue is you can go around and debate damage all you want, but it's sort of like your neighbor having a barking dog. You know, some people might be able to tolerate that. Other people don't want to listen to a barking dog all day long. So even if it's just a perception, they're still being annoyed. So how do we avoid the annoyance of this, regardless of the perception of the damage? How can we lower it to a point where it doesn't become the really loud barking dog? It's just a moderately barking dog.
Well, let me address that a little bit, because you know, we've had complaints on from River Highland when our two seismographs on that south end of the quarry haven't even gone off. So you start talking about trying to lower limits to get rid of those things when we're not even having any vibrations. Yeah, there might be some air over pressure. There's no way of doing it. And we've been very upfront with this committee and with neighbors saying that we are never going to be able to get rid of anything that you feel. We've been very upfront with that from day one. So we tried to operate that quarry in a way that's well below even what the PDD allows. And we do tweak our blasting. We take our neighbor complaints seriously. And Jeff, I don't know why we didn't get that one or what happened to it, but Derek is always the guy that calls back on neighbor complaints when we get them. For some reason, if he didn't get them, that's why, so we apologize for that. Now, what I would recommend later when we get to it is maybe a solution we can help facilitate some of that communication. But as far as saying zero, it's not going to happen that we can say zero. It's not going to happen.
I said moderately barking, not zero.
Well, sir, I mentioned earlier that this is already the lowest limit I'm aware of, and I work all over the Midwest, and my country works all over the country. So, I mean, it is already that lower level, and they
same
are doing
distance?
What they can to keep it go even lower. I mean, their lowest level was, you know, 0.115, which, or their highest level to the south there was that 0.115. So it's already three times almost below where the lower end of the PDD limits are, which are already far below every other acceptable standard that's out there.
About distance-wise, you said it's lower than a lot of other quarries, but what about distance-wise?
This is actually a lot further away than a lot of quarries blast. I do a lot of monitoring down in the Chicago area, where they're a couple hundred feet away.
Our Waukesha quarry is within 200 feet or so.
Not uncommon for blasting to occur. Like I showed with the courthouse earlier, I mean, it's not uncommon for blasting to occur within 100 feet of a house. Just the sheer distance alone does not ensure damage. It can still be done without causing damage. Now, you most likely are going to feel that vibration, but it's two separate things, and the reason you can't lower limits to address that, like Clint sort of mentioned, is that it's a moving target. You can't, you know, what annoys one person doesn't annoy another, and there's no level that's going to satisfy everybody unless it's just completely gone. And that's just not really possible with this, you know, with lasting. I mean, you're going to have some energy that goes out. So the best you can do is lower the limits, which you've sufficiently done, as best you can to keep it within reason. I mean, they're not blasting, pushing the limit at that Z curve where they could still say they're not causing any damage. They're far below that.
Would you characterize an air blast as being felt the same as a ground vibration?
No. It depends. It can feel the same. If you're in the house, it is sometimes hard to distinguish whether it's air blast or ground vibration because all you really feel is that the house shook. What you do sometimes notice is that the air overpressure is slower. The speed of sound is slower than the ground vibration goes through. So if you're far away particularly, sometimes we'll feel the rumble of the ground vibration, and then a second or two later you might also then feel the air blast. So in that regard it might be somewhat different. But
I live way on the south end of the subdivision, and if I'm outside and they blast, I can hear the air blast.
Right.
And it isn't like I feel it.
Right. Well, if you're hearing the air blast as well, that's also not the portion of the wave that's really damaging. It's actually not, you can have a very loud, audible blast that's a very low air overpressure. That's about the frequency of that wave. The human ear hears a higher frequency. The air overpressure that actually causes a structural response is that lower frequency that matches the natural frequency of the house, and it's a more of a push-pull on a slower wave than the higher frequency is what you actually hear. So they're actually, just because you hear it, you can hear it pretty far away, but that doesn't necessarily mean the decibel level's high.
And I'm also on 8 feet of compacted fill. You know, which I don't even get water in my basement.
The harder ground material allows for a higher frequency and it dissipates quicker.
A couple more and then we got to move on.
One of the first graphics you showed was a shock wave going out, and as it gets out further and further, it dissipates, like throwing a pebble in a pond.
Right.
But then you were just saying it doesn't make any difference how far you are away from the blast at all. And so I don't understand.
For an individual blast, it's going to decrease with distance as you go away from the blast site. Right. So that's what that's illustrating. Depending on where they are in the quarry, though, there's two factors that control the amount of vibration that is felt, and to some extent the air overpressure as well. It's the actual physical distance, but there's a second variable, and it's the amount of explosives that's used. So that's why I say the distance doesn't on its own matter, because if you're farther away but you use more explosive, just like if you're closer, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be out of compliance. You just are able to use less explosive to stay compliant then. So that's why I said that.
So actually one blast is multiple explosives.
It is. Right.
In sequence of fraction of a second.
Milliseconds, yes. The one blast itself is about maybe a second at most, probably less usually, especially the size of the relatively small shots here. So it's less than a second actually, but they're all staggered milliseconds apart, depending. And that timing is what gets, that's things that they work on to try to help reduce it, is manipulating that timing, one of the things that they do.
Can I ask, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but those studies you were showing, who funded all those studies?
Well, the United States Bureau of Mines, that was a federal study, so that was the Department of the Interior, I believe, was. So I don't know exactly where the money came from or anything.
But all the ones with the houses and the, all the statistics you're citing were.
Most of those were government studies.
Were what?
The old government studies. I don't know exactly where the money came from. I wasn't. Okay. I never looked that up. But they were government-run studies. The United States Bureau of Mines was a government agency. There was a research agency that was around in 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And they're not around anymore.
Who would have been on that committee?
Well, I mentioned one of the gentlemen was that Dr. Dowden, who was one of the co-authors of one of the studies, actually multiple of the studies of the Bureau of Mines, but there were many professors and scientists, basically, that were on the different committees and were doing different studies that were funded by the government. They wanted to look at, you know, damage to pipelines, and they funded a study on that. They wanted to look at, you know, damage to water wells. They funded a study on that.
So the government funded all these individual professors who were studying this.
Yep.
Were funded by the government.
I mean, the studies were funded by the government. I don't know how they were paid.
Is the EPA involved in quarry blasting in the United States?
No, I mean, the EPA is involved in regulation of dust, but they have a standard for dust, but not really, no. Not for blasting, they're not involved.
Oh,
EPA.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, EPA is certainly involved, but not with monitoring for blasting.
I guess I'd like to thank Clint for offering to make this presentation, and I'd like to thank you for spending your time and explaining what you do for the quarry in terms of the monitoring. I think it gives us a better feel for what's the numbers you give us. So I just want to thank both of you for offering to do this for us.
Yeah, that's right. I looked up the admin code, and it says the general requirements under SBS 30744, Control of Adverse Effects, item number one, blasting shall be conducted so as to prevent injury and unreasonable annoyance to persons and damage to public or private property outside the controlled blasting site area. So it does talk about unreasonable annoyance. So if the people feel it's
annoying. But then they go
annoyance.
On to define the limits as being the Z curve. And as I mentioned, they don't give a limit for what that is because it's a moving target. And so the limits that they do cite, you know, are the Z curve.
Well, I would think that
that's a regulatory limit that I've seen enforced all throughout. You can contact the state about it, and they'll indicate that that's the state limit.
Okay, we'll take one more, and then we're going to move on.
When they're blasting on the southern end, that's adjacent to River Heights subdivision, would using less explosives have less of a reaction and a feeling from us? Just using less explosives.
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, it depends how much they're using in each individual hole, for one. So if you're just talking about, you know, they could actually do a larger shot, potentially have less vibration if they do, you know, if they space out the holes properly. But they do certainly look at already using less explosives when they're closer per hole. In order to keep, because of the distance is closer, they need to use less explosive to stay at the same level. So, short answer is yes, if they use less explosive, it should theoretically cause less of a vibration.
What about less explosives and less holes?
There's a lot of factors there that it doesn't necessarily equate to that. It depends how those holes interact with each other. And if you use too little explosive, then you don't break the rock. And then that ends up with a worse result. So that's, you know, you sometimes get a better result even by having more explosive, because then you're using that energy to break the rock and you end up with less waste energy. I've seen that happen where you use less explosive because you're so close to something, but then you don't do the job of breaking the rock and then everything goes out as waste. So, I mean, it's a complicated thing that these guys go to school.
In the end, Mike, though, that's all going to be represented in the resultants that are coming from that blast, right?
All that really matters is what the seismograph result is at the point that you're measuring the vibration. You know, at point A is the blast, point B is the seismograph or the closest structure. You know, all that matters is what's at point B. It really doesn't matter what happened at point A necessarily. We're really only concerned with what's happening at the structure concern.
Okay, we need to move on. Appreciate your presentation.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And does anyone want to take like a 3-minute break? Doing okay or? Okay. So then, next item we're on is the what?
Just to be clear, Mike is an independent contractor hired by the quarry.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you told us that.
Okay. Just to...
Feel free to look up VibroTech. Like I said, we've been around for 60 years, and you know, we've got a lot of information on our website as well.
So Sols is a competitor of yours?
Sols is a competitor of ours.
so they're in the same business.
Okay, the next one is consideration for a suggested resolution via detailed write-up to the Common Council related to the survey and the center line of South 51st Street. So I did provide, the committee wanted me to bring back the draft. So in your packet, you'll see the original council sheet. And then on the next page, you'll see up in the left corner the one that says draft with the meeting date of 3/20. I think that's supposed to be 3/19, though. Did we just determine that, that this date would be the 19th?
Yes. Yeah,
so that would have to be corrected, Joel. Make that note if we move forward with this. Okay. So I'm hoping you had, did everyone have a chance to read this? Should we discuss changes or additions? On the first part, I took the items that were in the previous council action sheet. And let's see if I got this. And items 1-6, where it says citizens' requests that can be addressed by staff direction. So then if you flip back over to this one, there's also 1-6. And I put what I believe to be the status at the time that I wrote this up. So as you can see, add quarry monitoring meeting packets online, status complete. Update quarry website information status ongoing with map recently added. And we do need to get with Mr. Alberta and work on those. So anyone has any suggestions, I would love a volunteer to work on it. Alderman Barber?
Yeah,